I mean, how do I describe it? It's
bold.
A light.
Black.
Unapologetically black.
Very funny, amusing.
Caring.
You give great advice from a different perspective. Passionate.
Free.
Vulnerable.
A creative.
Sexy.
My girl is lit as fuck.
Always ready to twerk a little something.
Genuine, very genuine.
Resilient.
Like, sixth sense, otherworldly. If you know, you know.
It's so vibrant, baby. Hello, 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 everyone, and welcome to So Vibrant, the place where music, history, and culture collide. I am your cultural storyteller and award-winning host, Lady AC. So, just breaking down my tagline, music, history, and culture. I have never really done an episode dedicated to the music part. You know, I mean, I have my musical selections, or I talk about, you know, what's going on in social media, entertainment news and stuff. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, musical artists in that fashion, but I never really dedicated and done a show about the music per se. I think it's about time to do that. And so for today's episode, why not highlight the music that has impacted me in every way? Just had a great influence on my life, and that music is R&B. I am an R&B girly down, and I'm not just talking about 90s R&B either, because you know how people like it's trendy, like I love 90s R&B and vibes and all that. Like, no, I love R&B, period. I mean, from every decade, from every trend, from every sound, from every different kind of artist. Matter of fact, you know, that's the kind of music, the basis of the music that I play on my show comes from this root of R&B. Because R&B music has shaped my life in so many ways, from the very first beginning where I heard Stevie Wonder in kindergarten to, of course, the family cookouts and kickbacks and reunions. Or just hanging out at your grandma's house and stuff like that. You know, hearing the different music, the Southern Soul or the old school music back then. All the way to, you know, listening on my cassette player or my Walkman and on my boombox, to watching 106 in Park and MTV. Even began my love for radio, because I know I'm probably too young to be listening to it now, looking back at it, but I love radio, especially the segment of The Quiet Storm. You know, the DJs would be all connective and talk to you directly. It felt like, you know, they were just you and them. But then what I also loved was the love songs. They were playing the connection. It would build, and just the romance and the togetherness and the genuine love that would come through those songs. And I love most hearing the people calling the request songs or dedicate songs. And they would literally profess their love to the people who they were dedicating them songs to. And I even remember, and secretly kind of still want, because I don't even know if people still do this now, but kind of wanted, you know, someone to love me that much to dedicate a song to me. Like, I wanted that to be me so bad, you know. But just to show that cultural impact that R&B music had, it's so foundational to what we see in the music industry that I feel that R&B music kind of gets the short end of the stick when we talk about different genres, because of how the industry treats artists who perform under this genre. But when you look at the industry as itself, R&B music shaped a lot of that. I mean, from the way they do live performances to the different arrangements, the choreography, the dancing that they do in the videos of four different dances, all the way to how they market the songs and how they capture emotion. All that started through R&B music, which was produced by us, Black folks, making these amazing R&B groups that changed the culture of how we view, sell, look, feel, connect to music. And I feel it's about time that we learn that history and that cultural significance. I have a special guest joining me, Mr. Amani Roberts, who is a renowned DJ, motivational speaker, and now author, to have this conversation and to shine light on the importance of R&B and the ups and downs of these different groups, and just really showing that R&B deserves its shine. But first, of course, I'm going to give you some good R&B music. And with us talking about R&B groups today, today's selections are from some of my favorite R&B groups, you know, but with a little twist. So we're going to take our first musical break, then we're going to dive into the interview. So be right back.
Tell me what you want. Tell me what you need. Tell me. Tell me what you want. Tell me what you need.
Tell me, babe.
Tell me if it ain't good enough for you, babe.
Listen, babe.
Tell me
anything is possible. Anytime you want a girl, let me know. I won't ask why, just let it go.
Do your thing, baby.
Take control. On my knees, just say the word. No request is gonna go unheard. I'll take my time when I'm loving you.
Foreplay at one, won't wait till two. Tell me what you want.
Tell me, babe.
Tell me what you need.
Tell me, babe.
Tell me if it ain't good enough.
Serve it on the freaking side.
Baby,
if it goes your way,
And that was very unique twist on the Drew Hill classic, Tell Me. And it's the Rich Brand remix. And they took A Piece of My Love by Guy. Just how they paired so easily together. You can see the impact the R&B music has. So in the spirit of that, that's a great introduction to today's conversation and interview. And I truly hope you enjoy. So let's begin.
With many different hats from what I see. I mean, talking about internationally renowned speaker, DJ, even professor.
Yes.
You know, so where for you did the love or the connection of R&B start?
Ooh, I would say it started primarily on like Saturday mornings.
Okay.
And, you know, we couldn't sleep in too much. You know, we had to get up and do chores, but we were woken up. Me and my brother were woken up by our father playing R&B groups, R&B music on the stereo. And that was our wake up call, whether it be the Isley Brothers, Chaka Khan, George Duke, all the people. And so that's when I really kind of woke up. And then it was further emphasized. I grew up playing soccer on the East Coast. So traveling to and from games, there'd always be songs on the radio and maybe a cassette tape. Once we had a nice enough car to have a cassette, you know, a cassette player in the car, because that wasn't guaranteed back then.
Right.
And it was further emphasized and I was further immersed then. That's kind of how I'll answer that question.
Okay. And then I saw, reading up on you, you know, as soon as you moved into DJ spaces, you kind of found that same connection, you know, when you would play certain songs and then people be like, oh, I remember. Okay.
Yeah.
And you talked about how, like, you loved that connection it brought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for you, like, was that kind of more of pulling from experience, or was it more of just, you know, you linked with people?
I would say a little bit of both. Like, once I was able to see, particularly depending on the audience, you know, there's some songs that will work no matter who's in the crowd.
Right.
No matter how old they are, what race they are, what demographic. Like, you know, you put on Earth, Wind & Fire, September, people know that song. They get down to that song. You know, even Kool & the Gang, Celebration. You could even have, like, maybe Destiny's Child, Say My Name. Like, they know those songs. But then if you're in another song and you play New Edition, if it isn't Love, then, you know, then they might be captured. You play the Gap Band Outstanding, they might be captured. So, you know, it just depends on the audience, but there's different songs for different people. And I was just able to kind of collect that knowledge all along the journey.
And I love that, because it is a journey, especially with growing and learning the different ways music makes us feel. And we kind of grow up with this music in a way. And what I love about the mission of what you're doing with your work and with your book, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, is you said a very powerful statement that R&B is the foundation of every genre. I mean, I get it.
Yes.
I obviously get it. But what does that mean?
When we look at some of the most popular genres today, let's take, so we know there's a whole other podcast about how country kind of came from R&B music. Country music came from R&B music. Pop music as well. Pop music is like a derivative of R&B music. So we know that. So that's what I mean by that. Even rock music. Rock music, you know, because if we think back, the Isley Brothers were first a rock group. They were first rock, and then they evolved into R&B and funk and soul. So we know all this. It's just that we can't forget about where these genres come from. Then you look at some of the more like hip hop. Mm-hmm. Well, hip hop kind of stands on its own, but the amount of sampling they do from R&B groups, it's just fully immersed in that genre too. And then you have some of the newer genres, even like Afrobeats. Afrobeats has a call and response that's similar to some of the most popular R&B songs. So you just look at every different genre, and there's just different things that they've pulled from R&B music and the R&B genre to make them what they are.
Right. And I love that you said that, how you can see the patterns, the connections kind of interwoven in every genre. And I'm actually glad to have you, because I've been wanting to have this kind of conversation for a while.
Yeah.
But never really knew who to have it with, because I don't know if you've seen it or witnessed it, especially when it comes to R&B, how people kind of feel that R&B kind of, for lack of better words, pigeonholes artists. Like, they can only be R&B artists. They can only live in those worlds. But as a downside to that, R&B gets this rap. It's this limitation, like to even where I hear, you know, some stars, like, you know, people hear them sing and they're like, oh, when's the R&B album come out? And they're like, I don't want to do R&B. I want to be a pop star. I want to be a rock star. And I kind of hate that, you know, R&B gets slighted. So how do you feel about that or explain that?
I think nowadays, because basically what I talk about in the book, because it's less in the public eye, it's less on the charts. You don't see it very many. You don't see very many R&B acts. Like, on, well, we don't have MTV anymore, but it's just, they're more like pop acts. And you know, like, we'll take Beyonce. She's an extreme example, but, you know, she came up as an R&B singer. Then she went to pop. Now she's in country. So that's okay. And then she'll come back to R&B. So I just think that because it's not in the public eye a lot, people have forgotten just how strong of a foundation, how strong of a genre is. And maybe people don't want to be labeled as an R&B singer because they have the perception that R&B is kind of falling out of favor, falling out of style. But it's there. It's underneath everything. It's there. It's kind of like a quiet storm. It's still growing there. So I just think that it's perception. And now there's so many different subgenres and things that people just don't want to choose this one. But as much as they and some artists will fight to not be classified as an R&B act, when it comes time for the tour and when it comes time for the album and when they need people to buy and support them, well, they're going to come back home. And when I say home, that means they're going to come back home to the R&B fans.
Exactly. Because that's where it is. That's where
it's
it is.
Where it is. You know, yes. I mean, we're loyal.
We're loyal. Loyal. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
100%. And so, and I love how you kind of snuck that in there about the quiet storm, because that definitely is a subculture of itself when it comes to R&B. And there's also the title of your book that you put out back in February. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
In the quiet storm. So just to iterate that, if anybody ever haven't heard of the quiet storm, what is that quiet storm feel when it comes to R&B?
So quiet storm. So the there's a whole segment of radio back in the mid 70s that was started in Washington, D.C., WHUR, Melvin Lindsay. And it was just designed after dark to play love songs, slow jams, take some dedications. And the primary groups that they featured were R&B groups from the 60s, 70s, and then the 80s as it continued to mature. And that's the concept. It spread worldwide. Almost every station in the country had a quiet storm segment from about the mid 70s to 1999. Then when it got to 1999, the hip hop kind of really started to take over more. And so they kind of switched the formatting. But that's what it is. That's how I developed the book title, as a tribute to the song by Smokey Robinson, also the genre and the radio format. But the evolution of R&B groups specifically has been a quiet storm, because no one is talking about it and no one realizes it. And then all of a sudden when they read up, they're like, you know what? You're right. So I think the title has two or three different meanings all wrapped in one.
Oh yeah. And you kind of can tell that through the way you kind of shape the book. So going into the book, obviously, you know, we love R&B, we connect on that level, but what was the motivation for you behind writing The Quiet Storm for this book?
So in grad school, I had to decide, went to Berklee College of Music for graduate school. Undergrad, I went to Howard. I went to Howard, but I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston for grad school. And you had to, I was getting my master's in music business, and you had to pick a thesis topic. So I was deciding between two topics. The first topic was, why are there no longer any saxophone solos in songs? And the second topic was, why are there no more black R&B groups? Okay. So I decided to go with the second one because I didn't really want to go down a Kenny G rabbit hole. And so I was like, nah, I'll pass. But I love my R&B groups. So I started to research. Very quickly, I discovered that 99.5% of all R&B groups are black anyway. So I just made it the whole, it's just the whole category. We don't need to just say that. So that's the whole category. And then I just wrote the paper, did the research, a lot of statistics. And every person along the way, because you have a lot of advisors, you have a mentor that's like a music industry veteran that's helping you with the thesis. All along the way, they said, you know, Amani, you have something more here than a thesis paper. You could turn this into a book and it would be an amazing book. So I kept that in mind. I finished the program and then I started to write the book. So then, you know, you have a total of about 4.5 years later It's finished. It's out. I love it. And it was a long and incredible journey. But that's kind of the story behind the inspiration and motivation for writing the book.
And once again, you could definitely tell that that was a journey for you, but it also was really a passion and connection to it. So to get into the book, what I will say I love aesthetically and reading into it is I love how you went by decade, but the chapters were the groups themselves. And that was unique in itself because typically when people talk about music history or you see it labeled out, they'd be like, oh, the 60s or, the 70s or the 2000s. But you made that the point, but the chapters themselves were those popular groups of that time. Like you even mentioned, Lionel Richie, of course, in the Commodores. You mentioned Bell Biv DeVoe. You mentioned Atlantic Star, but you even mentioned the early groups like the Chantels. And the Clovers and the Drifters, even Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers. I'm like, oh, like he went there. So why was it important to set up the book that way?
I love this question. Just because when I was doing my research, R&B really, really started to hit its stride. And not really on the charts, because Billboard wasn't created till the late 50s, but really started to like become a definitive genre in like the 50s. Before R&B, you had like a lot of like blues groups, and you had like a lot of gospel, because R&B music comes from the blues and it comes from gospel. That's what birthed though this genre. And so once you get to the 50s, we had a little bit more data. And so I said, okay, we're going to start with the 50s and go decade by decade. And then we use four different criteria. We use Grammy nominations and wins. We use record sales. We use Billboard Hot 100 hits. And this is the overall Hot 100 charts, not the R&B charts, the main charts, because that's important because that just shows you the impact and the power of R&B groups. And then we also had notable performances. So particularly back in the 50s and 60s, it was not common to see R&B groups on like the Tonight Show, on TV, or playing at like the Kennedy Center. So if a group was able to play that in those venues, they got extra credits in terms of the metrics we use. So that's how we did it. Then we went decade by decade. Even some of my favorite groups couldn't make the list based on the criteria. But there were some decades where there were so many groups that I made an honorable mention section. I think it was the 70s, 80s, and 90s. There was there's a, the, because there's so many, so they were in the honorable mention section. There's some Easter eggs. I'm gonna tell you now. You can look and see at when I review the decades. If you look at the headphones, there's some Easter eggs in there. I'm just gonna put that out there, and then I made the book like we did a backup. We did like background information on the groups. Then I always highlighted how many Grammys they were nominated, how many did they win, and then I listed all of their Billboard Hot 100 hits, just to show people how many hits they had, particularly if you might have forgotten some. Then after that, I would tell you my favorite three songs from the group, my favorite three samples, which is an ode to hip hop primarily, and then I gave you a take on a lot of the groups. So I set that up for every single group in every decade, and that's the first kind of 80% of the book. And then you always see my little cartoon there after each chapter, whatever, just because it's just I'm just sharing me. It's just a little of me. And even there's so many little things like I'm not sure if you noticed, but like and it made the book a little bit more expensive. But you'll see like I'm looking like when you see my favorite songs, it always has a little fire emoji. Then when you see my favorite samples, it always has a little heart and it's in color. So little details like that. And then let's talk about the pictures. So
You gave
each
some good
chapter,
pictures now.
yes, I had to license these pictures, and they're rare pictures. You don't see these pictures very, very much because I had to license them and I put them in the book. So each chapter will have at least two, sometimes three pictures of the group. The cool thing is that some of the groups in the 50s and the 60s, you got color photos of them, like the Chantels. You mentioned them, like you get a color photo of them. That's like rare. So when you add the photos, the charts, the Grammy nominations, the background information, it's like you can become immersed in one chapter and just be like, oh my goodness. Plus, there's also the playlist at the beginning. You can follow along on Spotify or YouTube so you can hear the music as you're listening.
I don't wanna wait on this forever. But I'm starting to question the love that was made. I'm not looking for just anything. On the love that is based on the truth, not just dead.
Right now, you decide that you are not ready to settle down.
But if you want my heart, then it's time that you stop.
Like a mind in the light and the dark.
If you love me, say it. If you trust me, do it. If you want me, show it.
If you need me,
rub it.
If you love me,
say it. If you trust me,
do it.
If you want me,
show it.
If you need me,
rub it.
Be loud, just be loud. So don't just say things that I
That was Brownstone, If You Love Me, but the Chloe Martini remix. Now, of course, you can never go wrong with the Brownstone classic, and it's definitely one of my favorite R&B songs by one of my favorite R&B groups, but I love the little bounce that Chloe Martini put on in. You know, there's nothing wrong with grooving every now and again. Extra little groove. But let's get back to the interview.
I've noticed that about a lot of books coming out now, a lot of people are including or creating playlists that kind of give that energy of pretty much what that context or what that group talking about. Yeah. But especially with your book, I knew there had to be some playlists in here.
Absolutely.
Because you were talking about a lot of good groups.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know I can only imagine how hard that was to narrow down to know which groups to put in this book. Like, what was that process to be like, I can't mention them. I can't mention this person, you know.
We let the numbers kind of speak for themselves. Yeah. And if there was a lot, I had put some of them in honorable mention. Like, I had to mention Mint Condition. They might not have had the Billboard hits because they were really a niche group. And they might not have had the Grammy wins, but they are very, very important. So I put them in, you know, and all the other groups I put in. And then I just discovered a lot of shocking facts while I was doing the research. Like the Jacksons, the Jackson 5, they changed their name to the Jacksons, never won a Grammy. That was shocking. Crazy. That was crazy. In Vogue never had a number one hit. They always came in second. So just all these facts based on the statistics that were very shocking too.
And even Frankie Beverly and Maze.
I know, but I had to put them in there. That's why for their chapter I put
and
this
I
is
love
their hits. Them. This is their hits that were on the R&B charts because they didn't really chart that well in the big charts, but they were so important. They are so important to like the African American community that I had to include them. I had to tell the story. And that's why that's the only chapter. That's another Easter egg. That's the only chapter where I use the R&B charts compared for their hits as well. And now it might have changed since he passed away, but they only had gold albums. They never had a platinum album. All the albums they released, they only had a gold album. So it's just facts like that. That's another Easter egg. I gave it away. Mm. But that and then what will come from the book is there's so many facts and stats and funny stories and things that a trivia game is coming too. In addition to the documentary, a trivia game is coming because there's a lot of nuggets in there.
Right. Oh, and I love that. Can't wait for it too.
Yes.
Speaking of the different stories or the different facts that you found, for you, just to ask if you're willing to reveal it, what were some of the most shocking things or even maybe some of your favorite things to learn?
Okay.
As you were doing this book.
Of course I reveal it because there's so much more in there. But right. Like I mentioned one before, one that stood out is the In Vogue never had a number one hit.
Yeah.
So are you a fan of Gladys Knight and the Pips, correct?
Right.
Okay, what's one of your favorite songs by them?
Midnight Train to Georgia.
Okay, Midnight Train to Georgia. The songwriter for that, his name is Jim Weatherly. Mm. Now, he used to play flag football with the $6 million man. What's the $6 million man's name? Let me look up there. Ooh. Who played the $6 million? Hold on, I'm gonna look it up real quick. Lee Majors.
Okay.
So he played flag football with Lee Majors. So he calls up Lee Majors, who was dating Farrah Fawcett at the time. So he calls up Lee Majors. Farrah Fawcett answers the phone. They get to talking, and then Jim is like, "So what are you up to this weekend?" And Farrah says, "I'm taking a midnight plane to Texas to visit my family." He took midnight plane to Texas, made that midnight train to Georgia, gave it to Sissy Houston to sing first as a country song. Mm. Then Gladys Knight and the Pips took it, sang it as an R&B song, made it one of the biggest hits in history. Oh, that's one of my favorite stories because, and I did not know that at all. That's an amazing one there. Earth, Wind and Fire. Earth, Wind and Fire. And when I speak on stages, I talk about taking creative risks and unlocking your creativity.
Right.
And they exemplified taking a creative risk because for their live shows, which they are known for their live shows, they would solicit the help of a famous magician to help them activate their live shows. Now, when you think of famous magicians, who comes to mind? Who are top three?
Maybe David Copperfield.
They worked with David Copperfield to make their shows legendary. They were so tight that when they got the Kennedy Center Honors, David Copperfield introduced them. Then my final nugget is that I love SWV. And, so let me write this. So SWV and their song Week. Like, what's some of your favorite SWV songs?
Oh, I mean, Week definitely went. Use Your Heart.
Oh, yeah.
Use Your Heart is Mine.
Okay.
I do have a hard spot for the old Dirty Bastard version. I like the original version of,
Okay. So we go back to Week. The songwriter for Week was Brian Alexander Morgan. He first wanted to write that song and give it to Charlie Wilson, but Charlie Wilson wasn't available to sing it.
Mm.
So he gave it to SWV, and the song is about his crush on Shantae Moore. That's what the song is about. So this is example of like three, right? And initially, yeah, SRV didn't feel that they could sing it the way it could be sang, but he convinced them, and that's their biggest charting hit of all time.
Yeah, because they've spoken about how, you know, they initially they didn't like the song.
Yes.
You
know? Yeah. And he wrote it about his crush on Shantae Moore.
Wow. And you would never know that. And that's why I love these backstories. I love the research that you put into this. Yeah, yeah. And finding these little nuggets, these little truths. Mm-hmm. How has your experience, especially being a professor on top of being a DJ lover, how did that impact this work of putting this book together?
I did most of the research during the pandemic because it started in like June 2020, pandemic is full effect. So my students were bored sitting at home. So I got the help of about 8 of 10 students over 2 years.
Yeah.
I had 8 or 10 students that would help me with their research in exchange for, like, it's like an internship, and I gave them credit, and it's on their resume. So my students helped me do the research for this book, and I give them, if you look in the acknowledgments, I mention them by name and give them credit, and I love teaching. I love my students, and that just really makes me so proud that they helped me do the research. And it's in this book that they can then use and say, look, I've done a research for a USA Today best-selling book. And so that's how my professorship really helped. And then because I teach music business and I coach musicians who are in the music business, a lot of the stories, particularly about groups who might not have been able to stay together because they didn't own their IP, they didn't have their songwriting credits, I use those same stories and lessons in my classes when I'm teaching about the music business. And if I had my way, I would have a whole class on the journey of TLC because they are an example of that reached the highest of highs and the lowest of lows in this music business, its branding. They would be a phenomenal class just to be like, this is a class about TLC.
Right. And just break that down. And they were very transparent about that, which made it so golden. And just going back to the book, you did also mention, well, ultimately you asked the question of what happened, what happened to the R&B group for them to have such this cultural, historical impact. And then we kind of see what we see now. So you mentioned a lot of different reasons or things that happened with that, but what for you was the most impactful, you say, happened to the group of trying to answer that question?
So there's 5 particularly different reasons. You have the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
Right.
You have the emergence of hip hop, the emergence of EDM music, so it kind of pushed the genre away. You have the music recession of 08 to 2013. And then you have the disappearance of African American media. And I think that's the one that people don't realize what happened. But like, let's just take, you have Ebony Magazine, Essence Magazine, Jet Magazine, and Vibe. At their peak, they probably had about 8,300,000 monthly subscribers. After you get through mid to late, probably, I think I did the research, 2019, they only had 850,000, and Essence was the only magazine that was pretty much still in print version. The rest had digital version, but it's not the same. So you lose all those magazines. Then, if you remember, growing up, we had the Arsenio Hall Show. That was a primary way for groups to get earned media. So Arsenio Hall Show, that goes away like May 19th, 1994, 95. 8 days later, In Living Color, that show, another variety show that had groups to perform, was canceled. No more. I need to check the dates. But then you have Soul Train. That was where groups would go to play and everything. That also goes away in its format. So you lose all these different earned media opportunities. And it just continued to hurt our group specifically because they just had less, they were just less in the public eye, which means less eyes on them, less sales. That's the one that really people might not realize. But then once we're talking about it, you're like, you know what, you're right. These magazines go away and it just really hurt the groups.
Right. And that's why I'm so glad that you put this book together and you're getting this history out and I'm able to talk to you so we can, you know, gain more knowledge and connection to that. So for my last question to ask you, you know, what do you really want people to take away from the work from the book or just in general about the collective of R&B and groups?
I just want people to remember that a lot of the music they're listening to now comes from R&B, whether it be samples, whether it be remakes. We can't forget that. You can't erase the history and what's built up to what the music is now. So people just learn about the history, acknowledge the history, and just keep that in the back of their mind as they're enjoying all the new artists, and just be able to understand, oh, this artist is sampling this song, or, oh, they're taking the lyrics and the words from this song, which was famous back in the day. That's my primary goal.
Okay. And just want to slide this last little nugget in. I did take your quiz.
Okay. Yes, yes.
But for people who didn't know, he has a R&B quiz. Like, what R&B group are you? I got Destiny Child.
There you go. Okay. Embracing failure. So that's good. Many people don't realize Destiny's Child came in second on Star Search. They came in second to a group called The Skeleton Crew. Now, have you heard of The Skeleton Crew ever?
I have not.
No, but you heard Destiny's Child.
You heard of Destiny's Child.
Which they were called Girls' Time at the time, and they went through it, but then they changed their name. So, yeah, definitely take the quiz. That's a great it's at ImaniExperience.com/quiz. So, yeah.
Right. And so for anybody who wants to connect with you, they want the book, they want to, you know, learn from you, maybe they want to DJ for, but anything like that. If they want to connect with you, how do they reach you?
So the best way to reach me, particularly if you want to work with me, I really love to work with people who maybe are a 9-to-5 creative. That means they work a full-time 9-to-5 job, but they're also creative and they want to monetize their art. Primarily if they're musicians, they want to write a book. You go to ImaniExperience.com. That's A like Apple, N like Mary, A like Apple, N like Nancy, I, the word experience.com/call. Fill out that form. And then we can talk, because I love to coach and work with musicians who want to have their money, make more money, or they want to figure out a strategy to do that. So that's my primary focus. Mm-hmm. So that's how you reach me. If you want to get the book, it's available on all the online platforms that you can find.
Okay. And I'll also post all the links and with your social medias as well on the episode as well. But thank you once again, Mr. Imani Roberts. I appreciate you once again for coming to Soul Vibe and vibing with me. I appreciate you.
Just thank you for getting the book, reading the book, and just understanding the little nuggets that are in there. I appreciate the detail you put into the research and reading and the questions you asked. So thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And like you said, we got to support ours. We ride for ours.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right.
Once again, thank you so much to my special guest, Imani Roberts. You can pick up his book, The Quiet Storm, A Historical and Cultural Analysis of Power, Passion, and Pain of R&B Groups, out now everywhere you get books. And I will share all the information, of course, on this episode and on my social media pages, so you can definitely check that out. And of course, if you want to connect with me, I am on all social medias, facebook.com, Queen Lady AC, on Substack, Lady AC, on Instagram and Threads, it is _IAmLadyAC, and on Twitter, OX, all capital, IAmLadyAC. So until then, y'all, please learn the history, please learn the connection, please uplift all the genres that we created, but put some respect on R&B name, okay? Because it is here and is thriving and is going to continue to do that. So on that note, y'all, I will see y'all next week. Bye.